The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th Canto, chapter number 28, text number 29, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on December 31st, 2010, in Melbourne, Australia.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th Canto, chapter 28, Jnana Yoga. Text number 29. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Te Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Kuyogina.
Kuyogina.
Ye.
Ye.
Vihita.
Vihita.
Antarayai.
Antarayai.
Manusha.
Manusha.
Bhutai.
Bhutai.
Tridasha.
Tridasha.
Upashrishtai.
Upashrishtai.
Te. Praktena,
praktena,
praktana,
praktana,
abhyasa,
abhyasa,
balena,
balena,
buhya,
buhya,
yunjanti, yogam,
yogam,
na,
na,
tu,
tu,
karmatantram,
karmatantram.
Kuyogino ye vihatantarayar.
Kuyogino ye vihatantarayar.
Manusha bhutai tridashopasrishtai.
Manusha bhutai tridashopasrishtai.
Te praktanabhyasa balena bhuyo.
Te praktanabhyasa balena bhuyo.
Yunjanti yogam nutu karma tantram.
Yunjanti yogam nutu karma tantram.
Ku yogino ye vihita tararyair. Manusha bhutai tidasho pashrishtai. Te praktanabhyasa balena bhuyo.
Te praktanabhyasa balena bhuyo.
Yunjanti yogam natu karma tantram.
Yunjanti yogam natu karma tantram.
Kuyoginaha.
Kuyoginaha.
Those practitioners of yoga.
Those practitioners of yoga.
Whose knowledge is not complete.
Whose knowledge is not complete.
Yay. Who?
Who?
Vihita.
Vihita.
Imposed.
Imposed.
Antarayai.
Antarayai.
By obstructions.
By obstructions.
Manusha bhutai.
Manusha bhutai.
In the form of human beings.
In the form of human beings.
Their relatives, disciples, and so on.
Their relatives, disciples, and so on.
Tridasha.
By the
demigods, upashrishtai, sent,
te,
they,
praktana,
of the previous life,
of
yasa, of the accumulated practice, balena,
on the strength,
bhuya.
Bhuya.
Once again,
Yunjanti,
engage,
yogam,
in spiritual practice,
na,
never, to, however, karma tantram,
the entanglement of fruitive work.
Translation and purport by the followers of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes the progress of imperfect transcendentalists is checked by attachment to family members, disciples, or others who were sent by envious demigods for that purpose. But on the strength of their accumulated advancement, such imperfect transcendentalists will resume their practice of yoga in the next life. They will never again be trapped in the network of fruitive work. Sometimes sannyasis and other spiritual teachers are bewildered by flattering followers and disciples sent by the demigods to embarrass spiritual leaders who are lacking complete spiritual knowledge. Similarly, spiritual progress is sometimes checked by attachment to one's bodily relatives. Although an imperfect transcendentalist may fall down from yoga practice in this life, he will resume it in the next life on the strength of his accumulated merit, as described in the Bhagavad Gita. The words Nattu Karma Tantram indicate that a fallen transcendentalist does not have to pass through the lower stages of fruitive activity and gradually be promoted to the practice of yoga. Rather, he will immediately resume his yoga practice at that point at which he left it. Of course, one should not presume to fall back on the facility offered here, but should try to become perfect in this lifetime. Sannyasis especially should remove the knot of lust from their hearts and should avoid falling into the clutches of flattering followers or female disciples sent by the demigods to expose a so-called spiritual leader who is imperfect in Krishna conscious knowledge. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamala Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sagana Raguna Tanvita Jiva Sadaita Zavaduta Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha So, one should not become a spiritual master for the sake of wealth, women, and followers. If one does so, as explained here, the demigods will make arrangements to expose such a charlatan. One should become a spiritual master on the order of one's spiritual master. There's no other purpose. Actually, a devotee doesn't think that he's qualified to be a spiritual master. When Prabhupada was first offered the big Vyasasan in Los Angeles, he started crying. He said, "I'm not qualified to sit on that seat." that I'm doing so on behalf of my spiritual master. So this is the actual qualification to be a spiritual master, to be very humble. Just a humble servant of his spiritual master for bringing the message of Krishna. If there's any tinge of desire to enjoy this material world, he can easily be distracted from his duty and become an enjoyer of the senses. So this sense gratification desire is a very, very dangerous thing. One has to be very, very careful. To come to the path of bhakti, it is the greatest good fortune. The greatest good fortune in thousands and millions of lifetimes. Because we've been captivated, trapped in the snare of material sense gratification, suffering like anything because of it. Lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. So it really doesn't make sense that if you finally decided to give up material sense gratification and become absorbed in devotional service, why would you fall back into material sense gratification again? It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. It's a very foolish thing that one realizes that sense gratification is the cause of my suffering. It's what's keeping me in a suffering condition, so now I must give it up. And then, in the process of giving it up, you take it up again. It just doesn't make sense. If you're going to give it up, then give it up. Finish. That's it. Not that I gave up sense gratification because I was suffering, I came to spiritual life, and then I got a little facility for sensing enjoyment in spiritual life, so now I want to get back into it. It just doesn't make sense. Doesn't it all make sense? If something is bad, something is disadvantageous, if something is destructive, if something is not favorable for one's happiness, then why would you go back into it again? You see? Of course, that tendency is there because the tendency for sense gratification is very deeply rooted in the heart. It's a weed that's deeply rooted in the heart. If you just cut a weed off of the surface, what happens? Goes back again. So one may appear to be a very fixed up devotee, but if he only cut the weed off of the surface, then again it comes back. We've seen again and again so many people we've seen come to Krishna consciousness and leave also. You see, they appear to be very fixed up, but actually they just cut off the weed of the surface. If you want to become fixed in Krishna consciousness, you've got to uproot. That's the word given in the Bhagavatam. Dharmak projita kaitavo trapadamo nirmatsaranam satam vejam bastava matu shivadam tapatriyon mulanam shrimad bhagavate mahamuni kriting vayakrai rishparaha sadyohidya varujate krititivishu shvushabhishachanam. Completely rejecting all religious activities that are materially motivated, this Bhagavad Purana propounds the highest truth, which is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. And then it states, such truth uproots the threefold miseries. So how does it uproot the threefold miseries? You can only uproot the miseries when you uproot the tendency for sense gratification. You can't have your cake and eat it too. You cannot maintain the attachment to material sense gratification and at the same time get rid of your miseries. It won't work. You cannot have both. If you want to become free from misery, then you have to become free from the tendency for material sense gratification. It's one or the other. You see, you cannot maintain the attachment for material sense gratification at the same time become ecstatic in spiritual life. You can't do it. It doesn't work. If you want to become completely ecstatic, totally enlivened in transcendental bliss, Brahma Bhuta Prashtanatmana Sochati Nakankshati, you see, then you have to give up that tendency for sense gratification. So how can we give that up? Vishayavanivardante nirhaarashyadehina rashavarshangrasopyasya parangvishvanivardate. The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. So the key to give up that desire for material sense gratification is one must get that higher taste. One must get higher taste. Krishna bhakti rasa. We must get that taste for Krishna consciousness. Once we actually get that taste for Krishna consciousness, it is so superior to anything of this material existence that we can easily give up sense gratification. That which in the beginning may be just like poison, but in the end becomes sweeter than the sweetest honey, and which awakens one to self-realization, is said to be happiness in the mode of goodness. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text number 37. So in the beginning, it seems poison. It's like poisonous sometimes. Who wants to get up early in the morning for Mangalarti? Who wants to give up eating things that you were accustomed to eating in the past? Who wants to give up sexual behavior that you were attached to in the past? You see, the senses don't like it. When we say, no more, my dear senses, in the past I let you have whatever you wanted, but now you are under restriction. The senses do not like that. The mind doesn't like that. It's a disturbance. But with higher intelligence, understanding these things are destructive, these things destroy my ability, facility, my hope for genuine, long-lasting happiness, therefore I must give them up. One has to have faith to make it through that difficult period. There's that time of struggle in Artinaviti where you want the sense gratification but you deny yourself the sense gratification. It's a difficult time. The mind sometimes is very disturbed at that stage. But one has to have faith in the process, shraddha. One has to have very firm faith in the process and push onwards through the fog, knowing fully well that a beautiful, illuminated existence exists on the other side of the fog. Gyanena tu tadagyanam yesham nashitam atmanaha tesham aditam vajganam prakashayati tatpunam. When one is enlightened with that knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, then his knowledge lights up everything, just like the sun lights up everything in the daytime. So one just has to push onward through that fog of material sense attachment, chanting the name, following the principles, having faith in the spiritual master, having faith in the previous acharyas, having faith in the Vedic wisdom, push on. And then that reward is coming. When one becomes accomplished in the practice of devotional service, then he relishes the sweetest nectar at every minute. Nahi gane na sadrisham pavitram iha vidyate tatsvayam yogasang sira kalinat mani vinditi. In this world, there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism. And when one becomes accomplished in the practice of devotional service, he relishes that knowledge within himself in due course of time. In other words, once you become fixed up in Krishna consciousness, you don't need anything to be happy. Krishna consciousness itself makes you fully enlightened, fully enlivened. You can be in any situation and be happy. You don't require external props. Just Krishna consciousness alone in any situation. It could be pleasing situation, unpleasing situation. Doesn't matter. The devotee takes his pleasure within. Bhayasvarsheshva saktatma vindajatmani yatsukam. Such a liberated soul is not attracted to material sense gratification because he is relishing the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized soul enjoys unlimited happiness. Sukham akshayam ashnute, because he concentrates on the Supreme. So we simply have to master that art of concentrating on the Supreme. Instead of thinking what I want, we have to think, what does God want? What does Krishna want? Instead of thinking what I want, what does my spiritual master want? You see, we have to always think how to please our spiritual master, because that's how we please Krishna. Without pleasing Guru, we cannot please Krishna. He is the transparent via media. We cannot approach Krishna directly. We approach through the medium of Guru. Do not be upstart. Think that you can bypass the Guru. That is not practical. There are already enough monkeys in Vrindavan jumping over the branches. Don't be like a monkey jumping over the head of the Guru, the Guru Krishna. Therefore, we take shelter of the lotus feet of the spiritual master. Humbly submit ourselves at his feet. Because by his grace, we can become advanced in Krishna consciousness very quickly. If we can please our spiritual master by our attitude, our words, and our deeds, then our pathway back to Godhead is wide open. Wide open. Simply, we have to always try to please our spiritual master. To please God, that is not a very easy thing. Just like a millionaire, if you want to please him, what gift you can give him? But if you can please his child by giving it 2-cent lozenge, piece of candy, then he's easily pleased. So we have to understand it's much easier to please the spiritual master than it is to please Krishna. So we should always try to please the spiritual master. If we try to please Krishna ignoring the spiritual master, he will never be pleased. He will be very disturbed. Who are you? Upstart, get out. Ye me bhakta jana parata na me bhakta stite janaha mad bhaktananchi ye bhaktas te me bhakta tamamata. If you're my devotee, not my devotee. But if you're the devotee of my devotee, then you're my devotee. We have to understand the science of Krishna consciousness. We cannot concoct our own version, which is more pleasing to our senses, because you may do that. You may think you have a very wonderful way of becoming Krishna conscious, but you won't become Krishna conscious. At the time of death, you'll realize I made a big mistake. I didn't think I required a spiritual master. I thought I could just do it on my own, be my own spiritual master. Doesn't work. You may think you know how to bake banana bread. You may say, I don't need a cookbook. But what do you get? A bunch of goo in the bottom of the pan. You want to bake banana bread, follow the recipe. If you want to become the pure devotee of Krishna, qualified to go back to home, back to Godhead, then take a spiritual master. Surrender to him. Follow his instructions. Faithfully serve his orders with love. And then you're guaranteed to achieve the supreme perfection. You're guaranteed to reach that point where you can see Krishna face to face, eye to eye, and have direct, constant, personal exchanges of love with that supreme person. By the grace of Guru, you see. With the combined mercy of Guru and Krishna, you see. As I was explaining last night, this is a package deal. By the mercy of Guru, you get the mercy of Krishna. By the mercy of Krishna, you get the mercy of Guru. They go together. Take them together, because that's the way it works. It's like sometimes at the store they sell that epoxy cement. But there's two different things, and you squirt them down and they combine when they come out of the tube. Either one by themselves is useless. You've seen those tubes? Do they sell that in Australia? Epoxy, you get two, it's two different chemicals and you squeeze them down and they combine at the end and they come out. And you get a very solid cement out of the epoxy glue. So, it's like that. Guru is in one tube and Krishna is in the other. When you combine them together, then you get solid bhakti. You see. You take either one by themselves, it won't work. There's no potency there. You won't become fixed up. You take both of them together, then you begin very, very solidly situated in Krishna consciousness. Nishta, you become fixed up, devotee. Firm faith, unflinching faith. Yasya deve para bhaktir yata deve tata guru tasyaite katita yarta prakashante mahatmanaha. Only unto those souls who have unflinching faith in the words of Guru and Krishna are all the imports of Vedic knowledge revealed. You want to realize the Vedic wisdom? You want to see things clearly through the eyes of Scripture? Then you have to have firm, unflinching faith in the words of the spiritual master and the words of Krishna. Firm faith. And that will deliver you. Whatever Prabhupada told us, we accepted it. That's all. It may have made sense to us, it may not have made sense to us, but we put our faith. You see. We are very eager to hear whatever Prabhupada would speak. Prabhupada told us that's how he became qualified to speak. He was very eager to hear whenever Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Muttakura would speak. Others would hear or not hear. They would go away. But Prabhupada would stay and he would hear Bhakti Siddhanta speak. He said, I would understand or I would not understand, but still I would go on hearing. That's a very important thing. One has to be very, very attached to hearing the words of his spiritual master. I remember how wonderful it was to be with Prabhupada, just sitting there, hearing his words. Oh, it was so wonderful thing. I remember sometime in 1975, the beginning of March, a very cold front, very, very cold weather had come in to Atlanta. It had blown down from the Smoky Mountains in the north. Very cold weather. And Prabhupada was there, and it was so many of us. We were just sleeping wherever we could. A lot of us were down in the basement in this dark, congested. It was practically like a rat hole. It was so austere, but it was didn't matter because we knew that we were going to get up in the morning. Of course, we had to stay in this humongous queue to take our shower. I mean, it was really austere, the material situation. But it didn't matter. We were in complete bliss. We were all meditating on Prabhupada, you know. We were all meditating on Srila Prabhupada. We were in total bliss. Wow, we're here. Prabhupada is here in the next building. Oh, we're just in bliss. You know, there's so much nectar. The austerity of the situation austerity just made it even sweeter, you know. We're doing that austerity so we could be with Prabhupada, you know. And we knew he was so cold, but when that temple room was so nice. We went in there, it was warm, and it made it comfortable. And we just packed in there and just sat at Prabhupada's lotus feet, and we just heard lecture after lecture. And then he gave a special treat in the evening. Song class. How many times does Prabhupada give a song class and he teaches you a new tune? I mean, that was in 1975, that wasn't done anymore. In the early days, yeah, but in 1975, that was unheard of. Prabhupada gave us a song class on this song, Parama Karuna, a song for Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda by Lochan Das Thakur. So we were just totally absorbed in hearing Prabhupada. Hearing. You see, that's the mood. That's the way to become fixed up in Krishna consciousness. Be very, very eager to hear. Because that's where you get the higher taste. It comes through the ears. Learn how to drink deep the nectarian rasa of Krishna consciousness through your ears. Take it deep, deep, deep into your heart. And then you will relish the sweet ambrosial nectar known as Krishna consciousness. And then all the pleasures, all the varieties of pleasures that can be tasted in this material world, they simply pale into insignificance. They're no longer attractive. Simply one has to get this taste for Krishna consciousness. And then all this, the allurements of the material energy, they're no longer appealing. If I give you $10,000, would you be happy? Here, $10,000. Sure. Everybody could use 10 grand, no problem. Say, okay, I was only joking, I'll give it back. Oh, I thought it was for real. I thought Sankarjan was really giving me $10,000, but he was just joking. But now I say, no, here's what I'm saying. You give me the $10,000 back, and I'll give you $10 million in exchange. Will that be a problem for anybody here? No, yeah, here, take the $10,000. I'm glad to get rid of it for that $10 million. No problem at all, you see. So the happiness of material sense gratification, it's $10,000, that's all it is. It's a measly $10,000, the happiness of material sense gratification. Whatever it may be. Money, prestige, facilities, wife, house, car, bank balance, whatever it may be, guitar, surfboard, whatever you may be attached to in the material world, it's just $10,000, that's all it is. It's nothing more. Only $10,000. And if that's all you have, it appears to be worth a lot. But if you are given 10 million in exchange, then you can immediately say, yes, I have no attachment to this $10,000. I'll take the 10 million immediately. So Krishna consciousness, that is the 10 million. Well, that's, you know, you can't really put a price on it. It's unlimitedly valuable. Well, this is just a rough analogy, you understand. You can't say that, no, Krishna consciousness is worth, you know, an infinitesimal amount of value. You cannot quantify it down to 10 million or 10 billion or 10 trillion or 10 quadrillion. It's infinitely valuable, but this is a rough analogy. We can easily, we can conceive of sacrificing 10,000 to receive 10 million. That's an easy one to do within our brains. We can calculate that easily. So therefore I'm using that example. So the spiritual master, he can give us that $10 million, that $10 billion worth of value in the form of Divya Gyan, transcendental knowledge. So we just have to be receptive and not hold on to my little 10,000. No, I'm not giving up my 10,000. I'm not going to take this. I don't want the 10 million. I'm just going to keep my 10,000, you see. You've got to let go of the 10,000. We have to submissively hear the words of the spiritual master. Let them enter into our heart. Because by doing that, then we get the 10 million and the 10,000 just goes away. You see, don't need it. So in this way, try to understand the science of bhakti. In this way, try to understand the science of bhakti. We have one of two choices: stagnation or celebration. If we remain attached to material sense enjoyment, then we remain in a condition of stagnation. Just like a river which doesn't flow, which just sits there. A body of water would sit still, it stagnates. But if it's flowing water, then it's very nice and clean, crystal clear waters. So Krishna consciousness means you're always flowing, 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 flowing to Krishna. Material sense gratification is stagnation. So do you want to be stagnant, or do you want to be in a constant state of celebration? Even on the path of Krishna consciousness, sometimes we stagnate. We reach a certain plateau and then we don't push on to the next level. You see. Even in devotee taking up this practice, sometimes they get stagnated. But if you want to actually celebrate it every minute, you cannot stagnate. You have to keep pushing forward. Well, I've reached this level of Krishna consciousness. Now let me push on to the next level. There are higher and higher levels. We had a whole retreat in Govinda Valley last weekend. And we studied all the levels. The higher levels are amazing. Once you get past Anartha Nivritti, it just really gets really sweet up there. Nishta, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, and Prem. So, we are now struggling in Anartha Nivritti. That's why we really have to work very, very hard to conquer the lower self, but the higher self. We have to conquer over the demoniac tendencies with the divine tendencies. The divine tendencies are actually there within us. And the demoniac tendencies are simply a covering. So what we really have to do is we have to break out of the shell of the demoniac tendencies. Like a chicken coming out of the shell. We have to come out of the shell of the demoniac tendencies. Pravittim cha navittim na janana nasta. Jananadnasarasara nasaucham apinacharo nasacham teishu vidyate. Those who are demoniac do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. Neither cleanliness nor truthfulness nor proper behavior can be found in them. So these tendencies of dishonesty, dirtiness, you see, not knowing and not caring what's right and what's wrong, these tendencies we have to avoid. We have to break out of these tendencies, demoniac tendencies. Let the true divine nature, the eternal servant of Krishna, become fully manifested. If we make that sincere endeavor every day, even if we're not there yet, even if we're not completely pure, if we're making that endeavor every day, let me advance a little bit more today, a little bit more today, a little bit more today. Let every day be another opportunity to advance further along the path of bhakti. If every day I'm trying to do that, then even though I'm still a neophyte in so many ways, because I'm making that endeavor to advance in Krishna consciousness, I'll be ecstatic. Even a mundane example, a businessman. He's not very rich, but he's making a little, his business is expanding a little bit every day. You see. He's got a little bit more wealth, accumulating wealth. Each day he accumulates a little bit. Reminds me, I was one godbrother who was doing business for Krishna. He's a Jewish, from a Jewish background. He came back from a day of doing business. He said, another day, another dollar. You see, that determination, you see. I'm going to keep working hard every day. And every day, if I can even just advance my business by $1 every day, you see, gradually it'll become very big, successful business. Just $1 advancing my wealth every day, you see. So even if we can just make a little tiny bit of advancement every day, a teeny weeny, itsy bitsy teeny weeny little bit of advancement every day, you see. Just a little tiny advancement every day. Increase our Krishna consciousness a little bit every day. Develop a little bit better attitude towards the devotees. Maybe become a little bit more learned in Krishna consciousness. Learn how to go a little bit deeper into Japamala, how to become a little bit more absorbed in kirtan than I was. Every day trying to be a little better at offering that arti, a little bit better at distributing books, a little bit better at cleaning the temple. Every day trying to become a little bit better in how I keep myself neat and clean. You see, every little thing, always trying to be a little better, a little better, a little better than I was the day before. Then, over a period of time, there'll be a humongous advancement in one way. And then we'll always feel jolly and encouraged. You see? Always feel very, because one is advancing in Krishna consciousness, not stagnating. So, I can now ask you some questions. Yes?
Gurudev, could you kindly explain what is difference among three following enjoyments? What is exactly what Krishna enjoys? What is exactly what Guru enjoys? And what exactly is what a pure devotee who properly serves Krishna and Guru enjoys?
Okay, what Krishna enjoys, what Guru enjoys, what a pure devotee who properly serves Guru and Krishna enjoys. Well, Krishna's enjoyment is unlimited. He enjoys the loving relationships with his devotees. That's why he's manifesting all of us from himself. Krishna is Atmaram. He could just enjoy being all there by himself. But because he is all-powerful and because he wants to enjoy unlimitedly, therefore he expands from himself an infinite number of living entities so he can enjoy loving rasa with them. So his enjoyment is to have loving relationship with his devotees. The spiritual master's enjoyment is to please Krishna. His enjoyment is the same as the pure devotee that you mentioned, it's the same thing. The spiritual master's enjoyment is to always please Krishna with his every thought, every word, and every deed in all times, places, and circumstances. And similarly, the pure devotee simply wants to please Guru and Krishna, his pleasure is the same as the spiritual master. It's the same thing. The devotee or and the spiritual the pure devotee and the spiritual master, they simply want to see that my every thought, word, and deed in every single kind of situation will always be pleasing to Krishna.
But what's the principle? Why does pleasing the guru makes a devotee happy?
Why does pleasing guru make the devotee happy? Okay. Why does feeding the belly give the body energy? There is a science. There is a science of physiology that if you can satisfy the belly, then the whole body becomes satisfied. So when you satisfy Krishna, who is the belly, then the whole body becomes satisfied. So how do you, in this analogy, the guru is like the mouth and Krishna is like the belly. You can't satisfy the belly unless you satisfy the mouth, the tongue, you see. So by putting the food in the mouth, that's like offering, that's like serving spiritual master. And then from there it goes to Krishna, the belly. Question?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. Number one, you mentioned before you taste the prema, you know, and you're fixed up on all these levels. How is it that devotees have risen to the top ranks within ISKCON and they've tasted the prema, obviously, to get to that point, so they've been there for that long and it's actually proper part, tasted the neck of the proper part, and yet all they've fallen over? And number two question is, if that happens and you have received your trust in Guru,
okay, what did he say? I'm a bit dumb and a bit on the deaf side. Can somebody hear clearly what he said? Can repeat it for me?
Sometimes the spiritual master fall over.
Why the?
Sometimes the spiritual masters fall over.
Fall down.
Yeah. A spiritual master falls down if he had some ulterior motive for becoming a spiritual master. As pointed out, as indicated here. If he becomes a spiritual master because he wants to be, you know, he wants money, he wants followers, and he wants to be surrounded by beautiful women, then he'll definitely fall down in due course of time. That means he prematurely became a spiritual master before he was qualified to be a spiritual master. That's what it means. The qualification for spiritual master is given by Rupa Goswami in the Upadeshamrita. Vacho vegam, manasakrodha vegam, jiva vegam, udaropasta vegam, etan vetan yo vishaheta dira, sravam apimam pratifim shishya. Controlling the mind, words, anger, tongue, belly, and genitals. Such a person is qualified to make disciples all over the world. So if one starts accepting disciples before he's completely got his mind under control, his words under control, his anger, his tongue, his belly, and his genitals, then he's not actually qualified to be a spiritual master, and he's not going to make it in due course of time. He'll be exposed.
Well, in due course of time, he might be exposed, but what I'm saying is, how does he make it into that position without the devotees around him realizing that he's got ulterior motives? How does he get to that topmost post?
How did he get to the topmost position when the devotees around him, they can understand that he is defective in certain position?
How could somebody get to that position when they weren't really qualified?
Yeah.
That's the gist of what you're saying?
Yeah.
Prabhupada mentions it in his book, so we know that it's such a thing. He clearly mentioned this in the Nectar Devotion, that sometimes it happens. Prabhupada himself mentions it. So how does that happen? Well, all you can say is, because our senses are imperfect, we have the tendency to be illusion. And because we have the tendency to be illusion, we have the tendency to make mistakes. And in spite of making those mistakes, we think that we're big, learned scholars who know everything. So that's called cheating. So those, as long as those defects are there, there's a tendency for, there's an opportunity for minor and major disasters in this material world.
Second question was, if that does happen and the big guru rises to the top of ISKCON, then he falls over, then what happens to the devotees that are his devotees when he falls down? They put all their trust into him, they're talking to Krishna,
right.
they're tasting prima, and suddenly that prima turns out not to be prima. What happens in that case?
What happens to the devotees? That depends on the individual. It's interesting to note that Prabhupada mentions in his purport in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam that sometimes the disciple can actually become stronger than his spiritual master. And Prabhupada very humbly says that sometimes I think that I am in a very lame condition and I'm thinking that one of my disciples can carry me back to Godhead. So, of course, Prabhupada, we know, is he's humbly saying that. Obviously. But he's making a point that actually it is possible that, in other words, somebody really tried to be a spiritual master. They really wanted to serve Prabhupada's mission. They had a sincere desire to please Srila Prabhupada. And they gave all their energy and they were trying their best. They weren't perfect, but they were trying their best and Krishna blessed them with so much success in their preaching. But there were some little things in there they had never, in their heart, that they had never really properly dealt with, and they were sitting there along, those weeds were sitting there along with this tremendous garden that was coming up, you see, and of their preaching results. But those weeds are being neglected, and after, you know how those weeds can sometimes go shoot, and they shoot up and take over everything. So what happens to such a person who sincerely tried to serve the mission of Srila Prabhupada? They had some weeds they hadn't fully taken care of. They were trying their best, but they didn't fully utilize their intelligence to take care of those weeds at the same time. And sure enough, those weeds nabbed them in due course. What happened to their disciples? Well, if those disciples are very sincere, they can actually try to save their spiritual master. That's described by Prabhupada. You see, in other words, let's say someone preaches to me and makes me a devotee, and that person was sincerely trying to please Srila Prabhupada. They worked very hard. They made me a devotee. They attracted me to Krishna consciousness. And now they fell into some difficulty. So what should I think? I say, yeah, that jerk. Just see. He fell down. No. I should think, this person, he worked so hard. He attracted me to Krishna consciousness. Now he's in difficulty. Now I should return the favor. He helped me when I was down. Now what can I do to help him? At least I can pray for his benefit. I'm not able to directly help him. At least I can pray to Krishna to help this person who helped me so much in the past and now he fell into difficulty. Now let me pray to Krishna, my dear Krishna, such and such devotee. He did so much to help me as a young devotee to become absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Now he's in difficulty. Please, Krishna, you please help him in his time of difficulty now. You see? That's one thing. It can be done.
What if his time of difficulty was all the time and he was being deceptive the whole time? Then, what if he was being deceptive the whole time? So that, in fact, that was...
Well, you could think, well, Krishna used this cheater and somehow bring me to Krishna consciousness. Thank you, Krishna. Well, if one becomes initiated by a guru who falls down, actually you were not initiated only to him, but by that diksha you were connected with the entire parampara. So we say that our policy is, at least personally, and I think the GBC the other GBCs are in the same mood. I'm not GBC, but the GBC and the other gurus are in the same mood. that if someone really feels the need to be reinitiated, they can be, but it's not necessary if one feels very strongly connected with Prabhupada and the previous acharyas, because they were duly initiated by, according to the Vedic system. So reinitiation is not mandatory, it's an option that one could exercise if one feels, in other words, you have to see whatever is favorable for one's Krishna consciousness. One could be reinitiated. If you feel like an abandoned orphan, then one could be reinitiated. Or if you feel, but I'm in Prabhupada's house and I was duly initiated in the parampara, so I'm okay. If one feels strong enough, then it's okay. But if one feels like an orphan, you know, oh, I don't have a guru, I don't have somebody who can bless me, I'm abandoned, then one could take reinitiation. Either way, depends on the individual. Any other questions?
I want to ask you.
All right. That's it? Okay.
We were talking about removing the weeds and the weeds for self-gratification, and he said, you know, we should not remove the weed from the surface but uproot the weed. So how can we be sure that we are removing the weed from the surface?
Those of us who ever do gardening work, we know the different technique for either. You could just take something and chop it off on the surface, or you can take one of those weed uprooters and stick it in there and go zhup. So, in the same way that you can chop it off at the surface or you can uproot it, the weed, in the same way with the anarthas. So, how do you know whether you're just topping it off at the surface or you're totally uprooting it? That's a very intelligent and important question you have asked. I appreciate that question very much. Because this question will actually, to know the difference, will make us or break us in Krishna consciousness. To take it at the surface means one makes is making a show of being a fixed up devotee. To take it to uproot the weed means even in your private thoughts, your mind is chaste, you see. There is an example given by Prabhupada of someone, there's a fast day when someone's doing a nirjal, they're not drinking any water, it's a complete fast. But when they go to take their bath, they dip under the water and they open their mouth when they're down there, when no one can see them, you see. Drinking water while taking bath underwater on a nirjal fasta, you see. So, let's say there's some brahmachari, you know, he's saying, I don't look at women, I don't talk with women, I'm a fixed up brahmachari, you know, tapasa brahmacharena, you know, very fixed up. Then he lays down to sleep at night, he starts thinking about girls, you know. So he's laying there in his sleeping bag and thinking, oh, thinking of beautiful girls, you know, meditating on beautiful girls, embracing and so many things, kissing, starts meditating like that, you see. He appears to be a very fixed up devotee. He's following all the rules, but when he lays down to sleep at night, he lets his mind meander and daydream through all these things, you see. So that means he hasn't uprooted the weed. He's chopped it at the surface, he looks like he's doing okay, but within his heart, he's still contemplating the objects of sense gratification. So how does one know you uprooted it? Just observe your own mind, Prabhu. Look what's happening there in your own heart. You can see what's going on in your heart. You know what's going on in your heart. Take an honest look inside yourself. What's going on in there? Is it transcendental or is it rubbish? If it's rubbish, you got a lot of weeds to pull still. You got a lot of weeds. You may be strictly following all the rules and regulations, but if you got all that rubbish going on in there, then you got some serious weeds you got to be uprooted. But if it's clean in there, you're just thinking of Guru, Krishna, Vaishnavas, the name, fame, form, transcendental pastimes, qualities, characteristics, entourage, and paraphernalia of that all-beautiful, all-powerful, all-renounced, all-knowledgeable, all-wealthy, and famous, amazingly, splendorously wonderful personality, Krishna, then you're in good shape. You just got to be honest. Take an honest look in there. What you got going on in there? You got to be your own psychologist. Analyze your own mind and see. Then you'll know whether you've uprooted him or not. So if you got him in there, how do you get him out? You just got to replace them with transcendental thoughts. That's all. You cannot kill desire. If your heart is plagued with desires for sense gratification, you can't kill desire. It's not possible. You have to fill your heart with spiritual desire. And then all those material desires will just be pushed aside. That's how you get them out. You want to get the weeds out of the garden of your heart, you got to fill it up with the flowers of bhakti. You got to cram the garden of your heart with unlimited flowers of bhakti. That's the secret to how to get the weeds out. Any other questions?
So Maharaj, like can we say like as Lord Krishna said in Bhagavad Gita in chapter 2 towards the end, that if there is even one sense gratification desire on which a person meditates, it carries the whole boat in that direction, sweeps the whole boat in that direction.
Yes, indriyanam hi charatam yanano nirvriyate tadashyadati vyagam vayanamavimamasi. Is a boat on the water, chapter 2, text 67, is a boat on the water swept away by a strong wind, even one of the senses on which the mind focuses can carry away the man's intelligence. So the question is then,
can we disprove all this discussion before?
Yeah, that's the fact. All it takes is one little weed. It takes one itsy bitsy little weed to completely spoil the whole thing. One little seed of sinful desire that's still sitting there in the heart, all of a sudden it can just mushroom into a humongous weed and completely destroy your devotional life. It's a fact. So one has to be very, very conscientious, very, very observant of one's own consciousness and see and learn how to recognize the weeds. And that's the duty of the spiritual master. His duty is to see, to take, just like a psychiatrist will help his patient to get rid of all of his psychological, all the ghosts in the closet, as it were, clean out all the ghosts from the closet. So the spiritual master's duty is to help each and every disciple to become completely free from all the anarthas, all the weeds in the heart. That's why sometimes the spiritual master will chastise the disciple. The spiritual master can detect an anartha sitting there, and he just gives it a good chastisement to push it out. That's it. That's his kindness, his compassion on the disciple, to chastise the disciples sometimes. If all he does is flatter the disciple, and the disciple thinks, I don't have any problems, I'm a pure devotee, whatever I do is pleasing the spiritual master, and the spiritual master is not doing a very good job, he has to help the disciple to realize what are the anarthas that have to be removed. The spiritual master has to do them. He has to chastise the disciple. Any other questions? Yes.
In this verse, a person, a transcendental is checked by demigods.
Mm-hmm.
So how about the person who is following the bhakti yoga? Will he also be checked by demigods?
Now the demigods will actually help someone who is sincerely trying to advance in Krishna consciousness. They're not your enemies. They're devotees. The demigods will actually help. It's like the gopis, they were praying to goddess Kadyayani. They were doing demigod worship to get Krishna as their husband. Yeah. Yeah, but sometimes the demigods also check.
Yeah.
That's true. Look at the Govardhan Festa. Yeah, the demigods do sometimes do that. Yeah. They can sometimes impede your devotional service also. That's a fact. Sometimes, yeah. They can go either way. So, therefore, the spiritual master is more important than the demigods. Those who think demigod worship is so important, they're not very intelligent. They've lost their intelligence. The important person that we need to worship to connect us with Krishna is the spiritual master. Because he will never check our devotional service. The demigods may sometimes check it. So worshipping them is not the smart thing. You worship Krishna and you worship Guru, that's the proper formula for unimpeded bhakti. Okay, our time is, we're going a little over time, so I don't want to go any further. We thank you all very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Great Srimad Sankarsana Dasa Gaudiya Maharaj ki jai.